Here on this network, and for those of you that tuned in last week, I talked about 9/11 and how it is obviously, unquestionably, an inside job. Anybody who wishes to contest that point, I welcome you to call in. Just go to the bbsradio.com website, and you'll see the 800 number there. Give a call in anytime during the broadcast, and certainly like to hear from you. But having established that, or hopefully having established that, hopefully all of you listening in did hear the show last week. If not, go check the archives. You can listen to last week's show. But assuming most of you anyway understand 9/11 to be an inside job, it's appropriate to take a step back and now look at the bigger picture. Because 9/11 is not something that's actually very unique. The only thing unique about it is it's the biggest scandal of this nature. It happened right on our soil and involved the death of 3,000 Americans right here on American soil. But there's been fiascos like this that have been going on for decades around the world, orchestrated by the same family names, the same people, passing on the torch from generation to generation. The ultimate goal behind all of this is world government. So that's what I want to talk about tonight, is to put 9/11 in its proper perspective so you can understand why these things are happening. They're upping the ante now because they've been at this, stacking the deck in their favor, putting in their little inside boys in high places in government here and in other governments abroad, setting the stage for this merging world government where all countries will be brought together under one banner, probably under the UN, I hope anyway, if not the UN, then another agency similar to it. But the way to do it is to sucker people, get them in fear, and to get them to think that there's all kinds of global threats out there, and the only way to counteract them is to bring nations together and fight this common enemy. So they're creating these fictitious terrorist attacks as just one means of trying to bring that about. Before they did it, of course, under the guise of containing communism. Well, anybody who's looked at the history of the Cold War in any detail can confirm that the Cold War was a fraud. There are many university professors around the country that will not contest that, who specialize in the area. Walter Lefebvre, for example. Noam Chomsky. Michael Parente, who of course now is retired, but you know, you've got your Howard Zinn, you know, all of them recognize that the U.S. has been crying wolf for decades on end now, touting the boogeyman as the excuse for engaging in outright imperialism, and of course they do it in conjunction with NATO, particularly Britain, and you know, coercing other nations or bribing them or whatever it takes to get them involved. And a lot of times, you know, you have these UN joint so-called peacekeeping operations involving multiple nations. This is all part of what's coming. Get different militaries used to working together. Get various nations to join together in alliances, be they political, military, or economic in nature. It doesn't really matter. As long as you can get nations to work together regionally, ultimately, then you can get them all together under one global banner. And so that's why we have things not only like NATO, but NAFTA and the European Union, the African Union, Southeast Asia Treaty Organization, CETO, the Organization of American States, OAS. You know, there's been different names over the decades for these different groups, but it's all part of the same thing, orchestrated and funded by the same people, all leading toward world government. Now you have what's being pawned off on us here is the greatest thing since apple pie. They're pushing the North American Union. It's just another one of these alliances bringing nations together. This one is being forged for economic reasons. But again, it's the same thing, guys, essentially, as the European Union. This is all part of bringing all the nations together, ultimately under, again, this global centralized system of control. And, you know, unless you understand that, nothing really is going to make sense that goes on in politics. You know, it's like taking a very complicated jigsaw puzzle with an extremely dizzying pattern, very, very intricate pattern, and the pieces are very, very tiny, you know, say 5,000 pieces in the puzzle. And shaking it up real good and then scattering the pieces all over the place, most people would look at that mess and say, forget it, I'm not even going to try to put that together. You know, like, you know, you make a pattern with a spirograph, and that's what the whole thing is. It's just all these intersecting thin lines. How in the world can you ever assemble, you know, all the pieces look the same and they're all tiny. That's what they've done, guys. In our media, in our education system, they've so completely and thoroughly confused the average person by scattering these puzzle pieces in every direction that, you know, people shy away from even trying to put them together. But once you look at the cover of the box, as always, whenever you make a puzzle, if you have the box cover to look at, that can help you a lot. Now you know what the finished product is supposed to look like, and you know you can begin to start putting things together. And but this is what's going on. They don't present the right box cover. As a matter of fact, the media, education system as well, but the media is most known for this. The media presents you know, an artificial box cover. Or a fault, you know, the wrong box cover. They're giving you the cover of another puzzle. And so people look at that and they say, wait a minute, that picture doesn't look anything like any of these pieces. And they can't figure out how to fit the pieces together to make it look like that picture. So again, most people in despair throw their arms up and walk away. That's just what they want you to do. But once you learn what the picture actually looks like, all the pieces do fall right into place. So if you start with that premise, trying to make sense of what in the world is going on, that this is all gearing up for a monstrous, tyrannical, totalitarian system of world government, now it all starts making sense. But to really put this in its proper perspective and to show how there has been, indeed, this ongoing conspiracy, we need to go back, really, to the early days of this country's history. Before I even do that, though, I need to mention one of the key players in this whole operation has been the Rockefeller family, passing on the torch from generation to generation, starting with John D. Rockefeller and continuing on now, to David Rockefeller, who's poised to hand over the empire to his son. He's about ready to kick off any time. Good riddance, goodbye. And, out of the Dutch, he's somewhere in his mid to late 80s. But this is what's been happening, father to son, father to son, father to son. And back in 2002, Mr. David Rockefeller, our wonderful little fascist American pig, can't even call him American, folks, he's nothing of the sort, he's a traitor. Back in 1982, he wrote a book called Memoirs. And in that book, he actually boasted. He said, there are those who accuse my family of conspiring together with other elites around the world, other financially well-endowed families around the world, to set up a world government. They think that my family and I have been working behind the scenes, to orchestrate this conspiracy. Then he goes on to say, for those who make such a charge, I plead guilty and I am proud of it. Unbelievable. He starts off by saying, yeah, there's these crazy people out there who make these accusations. But then he says, I plead guilty to it and I'm proud of it. So he admits it, folks. In his own words, go get the book yourself and check it out, David Rockefeller's Memoirs, 2002, it came out. He admits that he and other groups, powerful financial powerhouses around the world, have been conspiring behind the scenes, using their financial clout to bend governments and to set up this system of global control. There's been other such admissions, too, not only by other Rockefellers over the years, but other, big names in the big elite families. But right there, that should tell you something. So anybody who says, oh, you believe in those crazy conspiracy theories, that's ridiculous. Well, here you have one of the chief players coming out and not only admitting it, but boasting about it, that yes, he is. And his family has been for decades on end now, ever since the 1850s. They have been working together covertly, behind the scenes, pulling strings, behind the curtain, bringing the entire planet under a complete despotic fascist system of government over which they will have total control, reap all the profits, enslave the entire planet, bring it down to third world status, and he's proud of it. But anyway, like I said, let's go back to the early days of this country's history and see if we can't make sense of what has really been going on here behind the scenes. Back in 1776, yes, the same year that the United States won its independence from Britain, just before that, on May 1st of that year, there was a meeting that was held between two very powerful secret societies of the day. One was Freemasonry, and the other one was a group founded by a man named Adam Weishaupt, who was professor of canon law at Ingolstadt University. He was actually a Jesuit-trained Jesuit priest. He broke away from the Jesuit order, and he decided that with what he learned from the Jesuits about infiltration, the Jesuit order really is the CIA, always has been, the CIA of the papacy, if you will, the CIA of the Vatican. It's a covert, sabotaging intelligence agency. In fact, they were the very first intelligence agency. All the other intelligence agencies, MI6, CIA, Mossad, et al., have followed the example originally set by the Jesuits. Their tactic was to infiltrate, other churches and or governments, whatever, whatever the target group was, you infiltrate it. You get people to actually go to, say, it's a Protestant church they want to infiltrate. They'll get their Jesuit priests, to high-ranking ones, to go to a university run by that church they want to infiltrate. They'll get their degree. They'll become leaders in that church. And without anybody even knowing it, they'll be manipulating it, twisting its policies, brainwashing its people through altering, you know, its official publications, and getting them to slowly but surely fall under the umbrella of Rome, to bring it into line with the Catholic Church's authority. The Vatican guys loved the power that it had in the Dark Ages. It controlled everything in Europe, the political system, all the churches, everyone's conscience, everyone's religious beliefs, everything was dictated centrally from the Vatican. It lost that, toward the beginning of the 18th century. It started to lose it, of course, and then by the end of the 18th century, its power was pretty much all but non-existent. It was dealt a deadly blow in 1798 when Napoleon's general Berthier went into Rome and actually captured the then reigning pope, brought him into captivity, Pope Pius VI. It dealt a deadly blow to the Catholic Church, and they lost a lot of its power, knocked the wind out of its sails. But ever since then, it's been wanting to regain that power. And so through the Jesuit agency, and others too, Opus Dei, there's a few others, but it's been primarily through the Jesuits that it's been infiltrating other churches and governments, because it wants to regain the control it once enjoyed. It's not just, of course, the Jesuits doing this. All the intelligence agencies work together covertly behind the scenes. Anybody who studied Cold War history knows that the CIA and the KGB worked together hand-in-hand on many projects all during the Cold War. They weren't enemies. It was a big scam, guys. Both sides were exploiting its people, keeping them in ignorance, so it could work, you know, to actually bring about this global network while pretending to be enemies with one another. The United States never attacked Russia, and Russia never attacked the United States because they were actually friends behind the scenes. They just used the Cold War as an excuse to engage in imperialism and overthrowing countries and intimidating them. And, you know, just all you got to do is look who was funding these people, who was funding these governments, okay? The Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, Rockefellers here and the Rothschilds in England, other big family names, the Morgans, the Fords, the Carnegies. These people, the Schiffs, the Warburgs, all these same names were funding both the United States and the Soviet government. So how could they truly be enemies when they're being controlled by the same money masters? The money masters are dictating policies. All during the Cold War, David Rockefeller visited the Kremlin more often than any British prime minister or United States president. Met regularly with Khrushchev and other Soviet leaders, Brezhnev. I mean, what do you think's going on here, folks? What business does a businessman have with powerful political leaders like that? You heard the old saying, money makes the world go around. Well, people use that saying all the time, but unfortunately they don't really believe it. They don't really realize how true that is and how extensive that control is. Money does control the world, guys. Runs everything. So you want to know the real power in Washington? It's not George Bush. Oh, he's a sellout, no question about it. He's a traitor to the United States. But what he does is done on behalf of his masters pulling his strings behind the curtain. George Bush, if he was ever to go against them, they'd crash his plane or suicide him or find some other means of getting rid of him, eliminating him, or simply embarrass him in the press, make him look like a fool and have him be impeached on that basis. He's actually already done enough things to embarrass himself, but because they control the media, these banksters, the media doesn't attack him, doesn't demonize him. So, Bush marches on. Amazingly, he has survived the worst, most whopping, blaring scandals of any president in American history. But the media isn't attacking him. It doesn't even matter if the whole country, the populace, is against him. The media doesn't say a thing, and so the impression is, yeah, everything's fine, business as usual, nothing's going to change. They own the media, guys. They control the media. The media lies to us about everything. I'm getting ahead of myself before I get into how that all came about. Let's go back to Adam Weishaupt. When he left the Jesuit order, as I said, he intended to set up his own system of world government. He wanted to utilize what he had been taught by the Jesuits, to establish his own system of government. Of course, as time went on, his successors who picked up the torch after him came to realize that they're not going to have what they want. They're not going to have their world government unless they can infiltrate the various big-name churches around the world, or big-name religions, I should say, and get them to jump aboard with them. because these religions are a very powerful, formidable force. You know the old saying, you can't beat them, join them. So whereas initially Weishaupt had broken away from the Jesuit order, ultimately what wound up happening is they join ranks. And now that's what's going on, guys. You know, the Vatican is working hand in hand with central bankers around the world, big corporate CEOs, the heads of, you know, the big media. Sometimes it's the same people at the top, you know, the same ones who own some of the big media, own some of the other big corporations, and, you know, sometimes a lot of those people very often have high places in government. They cross over very often. As a matter of fact, all of our major media today, television media, the printed press, you name it, are owned by just six corporations, and that number is shrinking all the time. You know, you got your Time Warner, you got your Disney, you got your General Electric guys, owns NBC. General Electric, of course, is a major Pentagon contractor. Do you wonder why now, you know, NBC isn't speaking out against this fraudulent war that we're stuck in the middle of, and isn't speaking out against the push to get us into Iran? This is a regime that's already lied us into Iraq, and now they're going to lie us again into Iran, and nobody in the media is saying anything about it. Because, again, you know, GE is obvious, owning NBC. It's obvious why NBC isn't saying anything. But you look at the other major networks, and they're all in bed with each other, guys. They're either directly owned by Pentagon contracted companies or indirectly. You know, they're interlocked with other companies that do contract with the Pentagon. So, you know, it's all one big, massive, fraudulent setup. And we better wake up to what's going on in this country. I mean, if you can't smell the fascism by now, I mean, if you honestly are sitting there shaking your head and saying, no, that's not going on, that couldn't be going on, then you really have to be in the category of brain dead. It's glaringly obvious that we're dealing with a monstrous sellout. The people who hold high positions in this government and a great many other countries around the world are absolute treasonous traitors. It's complete trash. But anyway, so what happens now? Weishaupt realizes the only way he's going to have his world government is if he recruits other secret societies that are already well established around the world. Weishaupt founded his group called the Illuminati. You hear people all the time talk about it, and people say, oh, that's crazy, it doesn't exist. Well, it's true. There's no group that is formally organized anymore today that calls itself Illuminati. You're not going to find, walking down Fifth Avenue, you know, a building that has a sign up on it saying Illuminati Headquarters, Office Number 5729, or whatever. You know, it doesn't exist, in, you know, under that name. But the goal has been carried on by many other different secret societies that have picked up the torch. The dream, this twisted dream of global domination, that's been the dream of every tyrant in history, hasn't it, to rule the world? Well, that dream has never died. It's just become more subtle. It wears a much more innocent-looking mask. But you lift that mask up, and oh, what hideous ugliness you see underneath. So anyway, he does just that. In fact, on May 1st, of 1776, he met with several high-ranking Freemasons from around the world in Germany. They had a big meeting, and he laid out his whole plan. They were very impressed with it. They said, yeah, we want in on this. We're going to work together with you. And, guys, it's been all downhill ever since. One of the first things they did, and this was a very deviously smart move on the part of Weishaupt, he realized to pull this off, you're going to need a lot of money. You got to befriend some very wealthy individuals. Well, of course, in his day, the most wealthy man in the world was Baron Meyer Nathan de Rothschild. So he got him in on it. Rothschild loved the idea. Because, you see, once you already have all the money in the world you could ever dream of, enough so that you and your, you know, 10th generation offspring, even if you don't make another penny, you know, can live high off the hog with all your kids and grandkids and great-grandkids, once you've already got all the money you could ever dream of, what's the next thing to lust after? To use that money to buy out political systems, to corrupt them, to set up your central banking systems that take control of a nation's economy, and then you can puppeteer people. You can have absolute power. You know, once there's no more money to lust after, really, you've already got it all. The next thing to lust after from there, because that's what this is, it's an insatiable desire for more, more, more. So you use that money to gain power. You control the world, and then thereby maintain that monopoly in perpetuity, endlessly. That's their plan, anyway, to so completely control the masses and keep them in fear and drive them into poverty that they will never be able to pose a threat to you. If anyone ever attempts to rise up and become independent of the global system that you've created, if they seek to break away from it and not be enslaved by it, you will send in the so-called peacekeeping troops, take out the rebels, crush them before they even have a chance to do anything. And not only do you get rid of those troublemakers, but thereby sending a message to other potential dissidents to keep your mouth shut, or the same fate will befall you. This is what they want to do, guys. And they've been doing it all during the Cold War. They kept invading country after country. And in doing so, they were getting rid of troublemakers or potential troublemakers. And they were sending a message. You guys better not mess around, or we're going to do the same thing to you. The public in this country particularly fell for this garbage because they were told that, oh, we're containing communism, containing communism, containing communism. Well, you know, there's only so many times you can cry wolf. Every single time, guys. I mean, they went into countries like El Salvador, Nicaragua, Guatemala, Katanga, Rwanda. I mean, what in the world connection was there between Guatemala and Russia? There was none. Absolutely none. As a matter of fact, you go through that whole list of countries, roughly 60 countries that we invaded during the Cold War, you'll discover that none of them, except for North Korea and North Vietnam, and once the wars broke out in those countries, once the U.S. invaded them, Russia backed away. They didn't want the conflict to expand and involve them, of course. So you can legitimately say, really, that of all the countries you invaded, none of them had any connection with Russia. None of them. And yet that was always, always the excuse. The Russian government, guys, did not have the financial resources that we had. They could not engage openly in the same kind of imperialism. In fact, it wasn't supposed to. The banks didn't work through Russia. They were paid to shut up, stay back, keep your mouth quiet, go along with the game, make it look convincing, get mad at the U.S. every once in a while, like the Cuban Missile Crisis, so it looks convincing. But, you know, we're going to take care of you political leaders. Who cares about your people? And, of course, the Russian leaders didn't care about their people either. In fact, Stalin, for example, killed 100 million Russians during his reign, guys. Did you know that? 100 million people. Stalin didn't care. The international banking cartellers were supportive of him. So, you know, speaking of international banking cartellers, let me come back now to the time of Weishaupt and his befriending of Rothschild, because this is pivotal. Once you understand the role of central banking in all of this, everything falls into place. Once Weishaupt made friends with Rothschild, and they had agreed upon this conspiracy to work together for world government between Weishaupt's Jesuit-learned tactics of infiltration and deception and Rothschild's powerful financial empire, they knew that they could pull it off with the help of secret societies like Freemasonry around the world, already established in countries all over the globe. And so they began immediately setting up central banks all over the planet. Now, before I continue with that thought, let me throw this in here. You might find this interesting. Maybe now you can understand why your dollar bill is covered with so many strange symbols. You look on the back, you've got the so-called seal of the United States, yet you look at it and you realize precious little on that seal has anything to do with the United States, especially the side with the pyramid. What does that have to do with the United States? You see a pyramid there. It's got the all-seeing eye of Horus on the top. It has a lot to do with Masonic occultism, but nothing to do with the United States. Why is that called the seal of the United States? Well, if you read books like The Secret Destiny of the United States, written by Manly P. Hall, who was a 33rd degree Mason, then you'll understand, as he boasts in that book, that it was the intention of Freemasonry from the beginning to use the United States to greatly advance their cause for world government, hiding behind the cloak of, you know, what later became the Cold War, you know, containing Soviet communism. that they would be able to engage in their imperialism, raiding countries and setting up world government, overthrowing legitimately elected leaders and installing puppet regimes that would be compliant with Washington's, or should I say Wall Street's policies, the bankers' policies. Okay. By the way, another thing on the bill that might now finally make sense. If you look at the wording around the pyramid, look at the wording above and below the pyramid, you'll see Anuit Coeptus, which means announcing the birth of, and then underneath you'll see Novus Ordo Seclorum, which is new world order. Novus is new. That's where we get the word nova. It just means a new star, a star that explodes. It looks new now in the sky. It wasn't seen before. Ordo is where we get order from, and seclorum is where we get secular or world. Novus Ordo Seclorum means new world order. And so they're telling you on the bill that through their control of our monetary system, and they do have control of our monetary system, I'll explain that in a minute, but they're boasting on our own $1 bill that through their control of our monetary system, they're going to create a new world order. They're announcing the birth of it through their hijacking of our monetary system. That design, by the way, of our $1 bill goes back to 1935 under the administration of FDR. FDR, of course, was a 32nd degree Mason. Many of our presidents have been very high-ranking Masons. Truman was a 33rd degree Mason. George Bush Sr., 33rd degree Mason, which is why he used such insider buzz terms as New World Order many times during his speeches. He also talked about 1,000 points of light, 1,000 points of light. Many of you will probably remember Dana Carvey on Saturday Night Live making fun of him talking about this. That is a Freemason term that is used to describe all the various workers around the world belonging to secret societies like Freemasonry who are working covertly behind the scene toward that common goal. So let's go back again to the late 18th century. The Rothschilds, already having a huge financial empire, owning the British government, began tenaciously to establish central banks in other countries around Europe and then around the world. He first began across Europe. If you look at the history of central banking in Europe, you'll see an astonishing pattern, like popcorn popping all over the place, all over Europe during the 19th century. These central banks were popping up everywhere. Bank of France, Bank of England, Bank of Germany, and on and on and on and on, one after another after another after another. And they were also trying to establish a central bank in the United States. You see, guys, once you have a central bank that is privately owned, privately run, you have control of that nation's economy. The central bank determines the interest rates. It sets the value of the money. It determines how much money is printed out, how much is put into circulations through loans. That's how the system works. The government, instead of printing its own money based on what it has in reserves of gold, it now prints money at will without anything backing it, which is where we're at today, of course, and have been for a long time now. In fact, since 1933, when FDR took us off the gold standard, FDR served the interests of his banker friends quite well. His family had a long history of powerful banking interests going back to the mid-19th century. Kermit Roosevelt, Clinton Roosevelt. Anyway, so all the while these banks are popping up all over Europe and the Rothschild dynasty is seizing control of all these European nations. To this day, the European nations look independent of each other, don't they? But they're not, guys, and they have not been since the 19th century. When you see them fighting against each other, it's all a big scam. This is all planned behind the scenes at bargaining tables. All the leaders working together with the bankers, selling out their people. The only ones who go and fight and die and suffer are the blind sap citizenry that doesn't know the game that's being played on them. They don't care how many of their own countrymen they send to their deaths. They have no loyalties to their country. They have no loyalties to the people that they're supposed to be serving. They have their own agenda, guys. This has been going on for a long time. We'd better wake up to it and fast. It's a big, rotten, stenching scheme. There was a person in attendance at that May 1st, 1776 meeting. Count, I'm trying to recall fellow's name. No, I don't have. I'm going by memory here. I don't have my notes in front of me. Anyway, he was a prominent elite European at the time, and he attended the meetings. And years later, he made a public statement. It appeared in a few papers in Europe. He said, "I cannot tell you the details of the meeting." Of course he couldn't, because he knew he'd be killed if he did. But he said, "All as I can say is this. It involves a conspiracy so pervasive, so overwhelming, and so downright scary that people would shudder in, you know, in horror if they knew what was being planned." He said, "This is a plan that there is no escaping from. Neither the church, meaning the, you know, the Catholic Church with all of its power, nor any secular government can withstand the, you know, this plan." He says all of these systems eventually are destined to fail because it's, you know, absolutely foolproof. And, well, look where we are today, guys. It has been foolproof, unfortunately. The masses have been lulled to sleep, lulled into a false sense of security. For the longest time in this country, particularly, we've had, you know, for the most part, unprecedented prosperity. People have been able to have their own homes, own cars. The only reason why that's happened is because they let it happen, guys. We would never have had the so-called American dream. Of course, that's pretty much dead now because they've exploited us and used us enough to where they feel comfortable. They've got most everything in place now. They can crash the economy, and they're poised to do that. Our dollar's dropping every day against all the other currencies, the euro, the Canadian dollar. It's all by design. They want to bring this nation down. Now that they're pretty much done using it for what they want, bring it down, and nobody suspects anything because they've been lulled into this false sense of security. They've been living in a relatively prosperous society, and they think it's just going to continue going on like this. They don't realize the setup that's been taking place, how they've been lulled to sleep. So you have, during the 19th century, this push to set up a central bank here. As early as 1791, with aid from the Rothschilds, a central bank was set up here, or at least it was the precursors of what they wanted to become a central bank. It wasn't a full central bank yet. It wasn't totally under the control of the Rothschilds, but they set this bank up, and it was their hope to turn it into such a thing as the years went on, to pass more and more legislation, give it more and more power, and give that power over to, you know, into their hands. It didn't work. The charter did not get renewed because of people like Thomas Jefferson, who adamantly spoke against this central bank. He recognized it for what it was, that it was a carbon copy of the Bank of England and other banks that were popping up across Europe at the time. And so he convinced people that, yeah, we can't trust this thing. And so it dried up and withered away. In 1811, it closed its doors, and that was the end of it. But the bankers were relentless. They tried to pressure the United States to take loans to fund the British, you know, the War of 1812 against the Brits. Many have postulated, and quite possibly so, that that whole war was actually orchestrated to drive the U.S. to desperation financially so that they would renew the charter of the First Bank of the United States, take loans from these international financiering fraudsters, and they could get us into debt so much so that they would literally own us. Didn't work. They didn't take the bait. So they orchestrated a panic. And in 1916, the Second Bank of the United States was created as a means to stabilize the currency, stabilize the economy. And the U.S. was still in debt, of course, so they tried to get the U.S. to take loans from this newly established bank. And it wasn't working, so they orchestrated another panic, the Panic of 1819, to bring us to a state of financial desperation where, you know, the government would acquiesce and take loans. It didn't work. As a matter of fact, Andrew Jackson came along later, and he recognized what the bank was trying to do. They wanted the federal government to take loans. Once you do that, then, you know, the government doesn't have to worry about having enough gold reserves to determine how much money they have for their budget. The budget is unlimited now. When you need more money, you don't have to worry about gold. You just print more money out of thin air, and you tax the public proportionately to pay the bill. You can, you know, that's why today, guys, we have all these bloated bureaucracies in Washington. We have these huge budgets. We're sending $10 billion a month that we don't have over to fund this fraudulent war in Iraq, you know, they can continue to engage in this deficit spending fraud because there's no gold that constrains them. They don't have any budgetary restraints like the rest of us do. Do you see what I'm saying? When you have an unlimited resource called the American worker that you can continue to exploit, there's nothing holding you back. And so that's been the driving philosophy behind this whole stenching fraud ever since. But, you know, how did they get the central bank here? Well, the show's running short. I got a lot of ground to cover, but let me whip this into high gear here. What happened is they attempted to kill Andrew Jackson. It didn't work. He caught a bullet in the head in 1835, but he survived. And he said that he knew the bank was behind it. He blamed Biddle, the head of the Second Bank of the United States. He said, "You are a gang of vipers, a gang of thieves, and I vow to shut you down." And he says, "By the eternal God, I will shut you down." He did the following year. He got the central bank, what was supposed to become a central bank, what was called the Second Bank of the United States. He got it shut down. Well, two decades later, they're at it again. They're relentless. They're not going to stop until they get what they want. Under Lincoln now, the Civil War comes along. They're trying to get him to take loans to fund the Civil War. He won't do it. He issues greenbacks, which are non-interest-bearing bills. These central bankers hate non-interest-bearing bills. They can't make money off it. They can't get in on the action and exploit the working class to get them taxed so they can charge exorbitant interest. They hated that. They hated Lincoln because he wouldn't take loans from them. He printed greenbacks. That, to them, was an unpardonable sin. That's one of the main reasons he had to go, guys. 20 years later, they're at it again. Lincoln, by the way, fingered the bankers as, being responsible for a lot of the woes in this country. In fact, the Civil War itself. And he said, "I have two great enemies. One before me, the central bankers. One behind me, the South. It is the enemy before me that I find to be the greatest of the two, the worst of the two, in other words." And, guys, that's primarily why they popped him off. 2 decades later, they're trying to do it under Garfield, President Garfield. He resisted them. You know what happened to him, don't you? The same thing that happened to Lincoln. 20 years later, they're at it again under McKinley. McKinley resists them. You know what happened to McKinley, don't you? You seeing the pattern here? You might be interested to know that decades later, Kennedy tried to override the Federal Reserve. He recognized it as being a major sabotaging factor in our government. And so he began doing like Lincoln did, printing United States banknotes. Non-interest-bearing notes. He printed, multiplied millions of them. This was a major threat to their money fiasco, their money monopoly. So there's one of your major motives. There were others, of course, but that was a big one, guys, because if you get rid of that, the whole system shuts down. They have no means to exploit us now and to pay the bills for setting up their world government. So now look what happens. They realize, okay, this isn't working. We can't, we can't get anywhere by trying to buy off or coerce or bribe or whatever, presidents that are elected by the people. We have to get our own inside boys in office that are sworn to our interests before they even get on the ballot, so that once in power, they'll do what we want instead of what the people want. And that's just what they did. They handpicked Woodrow Wilson. They bribed him. They lavished him with all kinds of financial rewards with the promise that he would, acquiesce to their wishes once in office. So he became the president of Princeton University, but he wasn't well known. He wasn't a household name. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, boom, he's well known. It's kind of like Jimmy Carter. He wasn't well known, but once he befriended David Rockefeller, bang, he became a household name overnight, and there he was in the White House not long after. Anyway, so you have, and by the way, guys, that's been the case with every president ever since Woodrow Wilson. Every one of them has been handpicked. Kennedy, too, initially. But once in office, he didn't like what was going on. He realized, just how bad this was for the country, and he didn't want any part of it. He had a conscience. He stood up against the system, and they popped him off. He was the last legitimate, honest, true-serving president, public-serving president that this country has ever had. And I'm afraid to say probably ever will have the way we're going, unless this nation wakes up and puts a stop to what's going on. But anyway, look what happens now. Guys, that's a fact. You can go and look at the documents from the Reese Committee, for example, 1953, congressional committee that was established to investigate the various foundations like the Ford Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Carnegie Foundation, investigating their inordinate influence in the government today, you know, if you get all these lobbyist groups, the same thing. And one of the things that the committee found was in 1909, the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, what a fraudulent name that is, they're not interested in international peace. But anyway, the Carnegie Institute had this meeting, and they were able to get a hold of the meeting minutes of that meeting, and the agenda on the meeting was to plan for a coming global conflict. They wanted world government, and they knew the only way they were going to do it is to set up a global war, bring the nations to desperation, and then offer them the solution, which would be world government, become part of our world government, and we'll be able to guarantee you that there won't be another war like this again, when they're the ones that set it up in the first place. The main issue at that meeting was how to involve the United States in this war, because the U.S. was, of course, isolationist all the, you know, since its beginning. How can we get it to go to interventionist? That was the big problem that they were facing. Well, you know, that problem was solved later when they realized, hey, we'll just send Lend-Lease over to England and France to fight Germans while we claim to be neutral. That'll tick the Germans off, and that's what they did, guys. They sent military supplies to England and France on passenger vessels so that when the Germans inevitably attacked these ships, they could say, look how evil they are. They attacked a passenger vessel. It's a long story, but this whole thing was set up, guys. Woodrow Wilson claimed that he was going to keep us out of war. That's how he won re-election in 1916. He lied. He had every intention of getting us in that war. And, you know, the same thing was done later with FDR. He won re-election in 1940, claiming he was going to keep us out of war, yet all the while he was planning with Winston Churchill how to get us involved. And they did it by sending Lend-Lease to China to support the war against Japan, and then they imposed an embargo on Japan to tick them off. Then, you know, they had the Purple Code crack. They knew when the Japanese were going to strike Pearl Harbor. They simply sat back and let it happen to use that as an excuse to get into the war. War is big money, it's big profits, and it's a way to manipulate the public. You see, the First World War didn't succeed. They created the League of Nations, guys. That was supposed to be the means through which they were going to create their world government, but it flopped. The United States wouldn't join. So what do? They orchestrate another war. We'll bring the nations into even more desperation. And then we'll tell them, look, we've had two world wars already in just a few decades. You know, the only way to stop this from happening again, it's probably going to happen again, unless you join our world government. So they create the United Nations, which is nothing more than League of Nations with a facelift, and this time they put it on American soil, figuring, they won't be suspicious now. They didn't like the League of Nations before, but this time we're putting the headquarters right here on American soil, right on the front doorstep, and it worked. The United States joined, and it's been the means through which they've been trying to get world government, but it hasn't been working quite so well. So it looks like what they're trying to do now, guys, is stage a crisis worse than 9/11, frame Iran for it, and then use that as a pretext to invade Iran, probably set off another global conflict, and then say, see, three world wars within a century. We have to have world government. Even if you don't like it, ladies and gentlemen of planet Earth, we're going to have to impose this on you because it's the only way that we're going to prevent another war. All the while, of course, reaping tremendous profits, the central banks from the governments that take loans from them to fund this war, not caring on either side, whether it's the financial side or the governmental side, how many people die in these wars, because these people are all a bunch of sellouts who are working toward their own interests and have no desire to protect the interests of the nations they're supposed to be serving. You see what a scam this is, guys? Your leaders, I don't care what country you're in listening right now, are all a bunch of lying sellouts, unless you happen to be in one of the countries that they're labeling axis of evil, like Iran, which isn't part of this club, which doesn't have a central bank, isn't playing ball, has no interest in collaborating with them to set up world government. That's why they're called axis of evil, guys. They're not playing ball, you see. The truth is, the real axis of evil is the United States, Britain, Israel, France, Germany, and all the other countries that belong to these little globalist-created alliances like, NATO and CETO and, the financial alliances like NAFTA and this emerging North American Union, guys. It's all one big, whopping, massive fraud. In a nutshell, I hope I've presented my case. There's a lot more to this. I'm just giving you the bare bones outline right now. In coming shows, you know, I'll break this down more and provide irrefutable documentation. In the meantime, though, if you're impatient, You can read all of this. I cover it all in my book called The New World Disorder. And you can get that at lulu.com. That's L-U-L-U.com. Just go there and type in my name, Charles Giuliani. That's G-I-U-L-I-A-N-I. And you'll see that book pop up along with some of the others that I have available. I'll have more in the coming weeks and months. Also there is the book that the topic I discussed last week is based around the book called Piercing the Fog of 9/11, wherein I document how that was an inside job. One link in a long chain of events like that that is leading us toward world government. That's what 9/11 was all about, guys, to get us to fight more of their phony wars. Before it was, you know, the Cold War, the excuse that was used. Now it's the so-called War on Terror. Just a different name, but the same game. It's, you know, global imperialism, taking over countries, stealing their resources, generating massive profits for the bankers that fund all of this scam garbage. But, guys, under Woodrow Wilson is when we got our central bank. 1913 is when they finally succeeded. I'll talk about that sometime in more detail, how they pulled that off, how they got that Federal Reserve Act passed, and it's been all downhill ever since then. Our money is a complete fraud. It's totally unconstitutional. The Constitution only recognizes gold and silver coin as legitimate money. It only allots authority to Congress to mint our money, not print it. And yet you have this external agency, mostly foreign-owned, the Federal Reserve, run by, again, private bankers. It's for profit, their profit, not ours. When they gain, we lose. Or I should say, when we lose, they gain. So it's to their advantage to mess with our economy, so they can steal more and more and more wealth from us. And how do they do it? They don't care about the worthless paper money. That's not what they want. They just use the worthless paper money as a tool to buy up real tangible assets that do have real value, such as gold and properties, so that when they crash the dollar, they're not going to lose because they're going to own everything. They bought everything up with their phony money that has no value. So when the dollar crashes, everyone else is going to lose who have based their wealth around it, except them, who had their wealth based on real tangible assets. That's what happened in 1929, guys. Maybe now you can understand why that whole crash took place. They did that to hoard an enormous amount of wealth in their hands, during the Depression. Everybody else was losing, yet these international financiers made their biggest profits ever off of that fiasco that they staged. Then FDR, you know, demands that everybody hand over their privately owned gold. It went right to the Federal Reserve boys. And then the money that you cashed that gold in for, FDR turned around less than a year later and devaluated the American dollar by 59%. It is the biggest gold heist in all of human history. And yet that scoundrel is hailed as the greatest American president in history by most history textbooks. He was, in fact, the worst president in American history until this current scoundrel came along. Guys, you need to wake up and realize what is and has been going on here for a long time. We're being taken for a big, ugly ride, and they're poised now to push us off the cliff. Anyway, guys, we've run out of time for this week. Have a great week, hopefully in spite of what I just shared with you. I hope I didn't ruin your day, but it is time to wake up. We've been asleep for too long. Okay, guys, have a great week. We'll catch you next week with some more interesting revelations. Take care.
Hi, this is Christoph Goes on BBS Radio, where you can check tracks from my new album, Turning Inside, because if it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.